This is DW News live from Berlin. Tonight, Ethiopia's troubled election, the opposition claiming harassment as voters give their verdict on Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's reform agenda. But not everyone in the country is allowed to cast a ballot. Also coming up tonight, targeting Belarus yet again. The European Union expands sanctions on sectors of the economy to increase pressure on longtime leader Alexander Lukashenko. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. We begin with the election in Ethiopia. Opposition officials say they have faced harassment during the country's elections, despite Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's promises of a fair and peaceful vote. Polling places have extended their hours to accommodate the long lines of people waiting to cast their ballots. Now, this election is a delayed election. Voting was scheduled to take place last year before the pandemic arrived. But the coronavirus isn't the only obstacle standing between Ethiopians and a truly nationwide vote.
It's election day in Ethiopia, but in the region of Tigray, it's difficult to tell. People here are mired in a humanitarian crisis that began last November, when violence erupted between the local ruling party and the Ethiopian government.
The humanitarian situation is dire, with reports of denial of humanitarian access in some localities and looting of aid supplies by soldiers. An estimated 350,000 people are threatened by famine.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has been calling this Ethiopia's first free election, but the claim is belied by who truly gets to vote. Only one-third of the country's population has registered to vote, and one-fifth of Ethiopia's constituencies are absent. These regions are deemed too risky to hold safe elections. Those who could vote started gathering outside polling stations before dawn. They were met by poor infrastructure.
It's really time-consuming. I have to stress that point. I have friends who even gave up on voting because of the large queue.
I was expecting more women to come out and vote, but it didn't happen.
Until today, the five elections we had, we didn't see much hope. We're now sitting here waiting to vote. In villages neighboring Tigray, voters have also faced long waits to cast their ballots. Meanwhile, in the Tigray region itself, people are still struggling to get basic necessities like food and fuel.
Well, earlier, we spoke to Adem Abebe from the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance in The Hague. We asked him how Abiy is perceived both at home and abroad.
I think you're right that the reputation of Abiy Ahmed has suffered, particularly at the international level. But domestically, he still maintains quite a large following, a significant following. And there is a lot of hope that what he promised when he came to power could be realized. So the war going on in Tigray and the tragedies unfolding there have damaged his reputation, but he still maintains quite a following in the country.
All right, here's a look now at some of the other stories that are making headlines around the world. Armenia's Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has won another term in office following snap parliamentary elections. Official results show his party has won 54% of the vote. That's despite widespread frustration with his handling of a military conflict last year with historic rival Azerbaijan. Sweden's Prime Minister today lost a no-confidence vote in parliament. Stefan Löfven now has a week to resign or announce snap elections. The vote was triggered by a plan to ease rent controls. Löfven is the first Swedish prime minister to ever lose a confidence vote. Spain's prime minister says his government will pardon the 9 jailed leaders of Catalonia's failed 2017 independence bid. Pedro Sanchez said he hopes to ease tensions in the northeastern region and to kickstart negotiations with Catalan authorities. The European Union has approved new sanctions against Belarus, targeting more than 80 individuals and organizations. Member states want to increase pressure on leader Alexander Lukashenko after he forced a passenger plane to land in order to arrest a dissident journalist on board. Now, state representatives met today with Belarusian opposition leader Svetlana Tikhanovskaya before approving the latest measures. The European Union is also planning wide-ranging sanctions that would target whole sectors of the Belarusian economy.
Svetlana Tikhanovskaya's message to the EU was clear. Take courage and don't wait. The Belarusian opposition leader had been invited to Luxembourg as the guest of EU foreign ministers. She's demanding decisive action against Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko. And that is exactly what the EU is now doing with far-reaching economic sanctions. I think that these are sanctions that will hurt. And I hope it hurts so much that this regime will come to its knees. The EU is targeting the state potash industry in Belarus. Imports of fertilizer worth billions of dollars will soon be banned. The same applies to oil and oil products from Belarus. Negotiators also overcame initial opposition from Austria to agree sanctions targeting Belarusian banking and other financial sectors. It really is a great achievement that we have succeeded in the last few days in making sure that everyone does their part to ensure that these sanctions are now implemented, despite the fact that it also affects our own financial economy. EU leaders have expressed concern about retaliation and the possibility of Belarus helping refugees enter the EU.
We have information that the Belarusian government is actually facilitating their arrival from Iraq and Turkey into Minsk, and then they're being led to Lithuanian border.
The EU may have taken action today, but the final chapter in the conflict with Belarus is still far from being written.
Well, Germany's national elections are just over 3 months away, and the country's ruling conservatives, they've agreed to a joint program to run their campaigns on. CDU leader Armin Laschet and Markus Söder from the Bavarian sister party, the CSU, today presented their program here in Berlin. It promises tax relief and fiscal discipline. Critics say it's not clear how the plans would be funded. Germany's conservatives are leading in public opinion polls. September's vote will be the first in 16 years not to feature Angela Merkel. Armin Laschet, who you see there on the right, hopes to replace her as the next German chancellor. Well, earlier, I asked our political correspondent, Simon Young, just what Laschet and Söder are promising.
Two things, really. Change, but security. Armin Laschet, the CDU leader, is talking about modernising Germany, modernising, above all, Germany's economy, learning the lessons from the pandemic, as he put it. He also talked about unleashing the potential of German industry. And he said the phrase, you know, we can't do it, often heard in past years in Germany. That's something you don't hear anymore, he says. As a result of the pandemic, people have found new ways of doing things. And that phrase has got to stay history. Germany has to become a can-do nation, is his idea. And he's particularly looking at dealing with the climate crisis there, committing to that pledge of climate neutrality for Germany by 2045. And there's a lot in this, as you say, about removing burdens, particularly taxation burdens, from German businesses, but also from German families. I would say it's not that swerve to the right that some people had feared coming after the centrism of Angela Merkel. It's very much appealing to the middle ground, this manifesto. And of course, that will be important as the Conservatives fight for every vote going through to the election in September.
Simon Young reporting there. Well, the printing presses of one of Hong Kong's last pro-democracy newspapers could stop rolling within days. The Apple Daily says this Friday's edition is likely to be its last. That after authorities froze its assets under China's new national security law.
These newspapers could be a thing of the past. Not because of digitalization or rising competition, but because the government wants to put a stop to them. That's what supporters of Hong Kong's pro-democracy newspaper, Apple Daily, are saying. Last week, police raided the company's newsroom for the second time in under a year. Five senior executives were arrested after authorities accused them of publishing articles that violated China's sweeping national security law. The government also froze the paper's assets, leaving it unable to pay staff or conduct business. The paper's owners say they have enough cash to last a few weeks, but after that, their future and the future of free press in Hong Kong is uncertain. Apple Daily CEO Jimmy Lai was arrested during last year's raid. He was sentenced to 14 months in prison over his role in an anti-government protest in 2019. Despite China's intensifying crackdown on media critical of the mainland government, many Hong Kongers are still lining up to show their support. I'm here to buy a copy of Apple Daily because of what the police did. I have to support them in any case. I've paid their monthly subscription fee, but I think I'll continue to buy newspapers to help them. I want to support freedom of speech because the journalists at Apple Daily have done nothing wrong. But whether Apple Daily can afford to keep publishing is uncertain. Its future will be decided by the company's board on Friday.
At Euro 2020, two groups wrapped up on Monday. In Group C, Austria joined the Netherlands in qualifying for the last 16, while there was a night of drama in Group B. In Copenhagen, Denmark hammered Russia 4-1 to secure a surprising second-placed finish in front of a packed stadium, with fans and players clearly emotional after Christian Eriksen's collapse in the first group game. In St. Petersburg, Finland held Belgium for a long time before an own goal and a Romelu Lukaku strike secured a 2-0 win for one of the tournament favorites. All right, let's take a look at the final standings in Group B. Belgium finished top with 3 wins out of 3. Second place Denmark also qualifying for the last 16. Finland must wait anxiously to see if they go through as one of the best third place teams, while Russia crash out of the tournament. All right, joining me here at the big table now for more on Euro 2020 is Oliver Moody from DW Sports. Oliver, I guess Denmark's huge win has to be the story of the day.
Brent, this is the feel-good story of the tournament so far. This was a game, a performance, and an atmosphere at the Parken Stadium in Copenhagen that gave me, and I'm sure a lot of other fans watching, goosebumps throughout. After the traumatic start to this tournament that Denmark had with Christian Eriksen, of course, suffering that cardiac arrest, and the way that must have affected the players on the pitch and psychologically as well, that this is a massive achievement for them to get through to the next round. And one moment in particular that I think will stay with me for a long time was the opening goal. Mikkel Damsgaard absolutely hammering one in from distance. After everything that's happened for Denmark so far, and of course a year and a half of empty stadiums with soulless atmospheres, to see this eruption of joy behind the goal is something that really took my breath away. Whatever happens now with Denmark for the rest of this tournament, the players and the fans have earned a huge amount of respect.
Belgium, they also go through as group winners. Will Finland get to join them?
That is the big question. This was another game with a huge dose of drama as well. It was such a gutsy performance from Finland, making their tournament debut just 16 minutes away from assuring qualification to out of the group stage into the knockout phase. Against a far superior Belgian team. And it was Lukas Radetzky, the goalkeeper who plays his club football here in Germany, who was the tragic hero. He made a string of brilliant saves to keep Belgium at bay before scoring a really unfortunate own goal to give Belgium the lead. Belgium, of course, added another one after that. Finland sit in third place at the moment. That might still be enough for them. They'll be sweating, though, on the rest of the games in the group phase over the next 2 days.
Well, we know the final is set to take place in London, but there's talk that it may have to be moved. What do we know?
Well, that's right. Of course, cases are rising in London, and that is a headache for UEFA. And it's also, of course, a chance for a bit of politicking from certain people. Mario Draghi, the Italian Prime Minister, today saying that he would like to see UEFA move the final to Rome. Big surprise there. We also had Markus Söder, the Bavarian state premier, saying UEFA needs to have a solution in its back pocket.
Come to Munich.
Oh, and by the way, Munich would be happy to host some more games. Yeah. So, you know, never ones to miss a chance to take advantage of a bad situation.
We'll see what happens. Oliver Moody, as always. Oliver, thank you. You're watching DW News. DW Business News is up next with Janelle. Stick around. She will be right back.